the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a Monday. Not just any Monday. Oh, boy. This is the week that we've been waiting for. Now, I can't say anything's going to change, but we will finally have those long-awaited hearings. They begin Thursday night, prime time, and I guess, you know, the committee waited until the basic TV season was done so that there's no worries about preempting any season finale. Like, This Is Us ended. And if you didn't cry, you have an ice cube for a heart. But that's besides the point. So, So Thursday night, 8 p.m., the hearings begin. And we understand, look, we got a preview of what this committee is capable of during two impeachment trials, where they laid out the evidence quite compellingly. This time, I understand, they're getting help from some TV producers to produce an event that will be carried out over the course of a week to have the greatest impact. Now, here's the problem. The channels that the people who need to the most are unfortunately watching those channels that will not air the hearings. And they're going to be everywhere. I think Thursday night, prime time, if you go to ABC, CBS, NBC, for the people who still watch network television, they will be showing them. The problem is Fox will probably have reruns of the Benghazi hearings because, you know, that's where they're at. They want to rehash them once, if they take control of Congress again come November or January, more accurately. But, yeah. So anyway, this is we're approaching this week with trepidation, I would say, nervousness, anticipation, a bit of excitement, high expectations, but we're trying to lower them because we know how disappointed we often get when we rely on the Democrats to deliver something important. So on Friday, actually last week, Digby was here. What day was Digby here? It was Wednesday, maybe? I don't know. All the days run together. But when Digby was here, yes, Wednesday, we were talking about an article that appeared in Politico that was written by Heidi Prisbella. Now, Heidi Prisbella was a correspondent with NBC News for the last few years, and I thought she did a pretty damn good job, so frankly, I wasn't surprised when I heard she was no longer with NBC News because, well, you know the way media works or doesn't these days. Anyway, she's now, I guess, a free agent, but still churning out some really important stories like this one that was in Politico this past week. And it's especially important now as we head into the hearings, the January 6th hearings. And what she has uncovered through a series of recordings and tips, recordings of Republican Party operatives meeting with grassroots activists to figure out their game plan for the 2022 midterm elections. And it's a continuation of what they started in the 2020 presidential elections, where they attempted to overturn a legitimate election, where they attempted to control the results to make it appear that their candidate won when he absolutely did not. So Heidi Prisbella had this great piece in Politico. I reached out to her. I've never met her before. But we connected. I tweeted something nice about the article, and then she followed me on Twitter. So I was able to then DM her, direct message her, and ask her to come on the show. And she said yes. So we will be talking. She'll join us at the bottom of the hour for the second half hour of the show. And we'll find out what she knows. So this was a weekend, right? When we last spoke, I told you, you know, I'm here in South Florida where hurricane season began. It runs June 1st through November 30th every year. And sure enough, June 1st came, and by June 3rd, we're looking at a storm. It was actually a Pacific storm that crossed over into the Gulf of Mexico and then hit us here in South Florida. It was still, it wasn't even a named storm when it crossed over the state and brought a ton of rain. My tomatoes are looking so good. But, you know, that said, where I am, even the streets here flooded. But if you looked at news footage from Miami, underwater. And yet, go figure, the developers are still building high rises at the beach. This is like today's Republican Party. They just don't want to believe what's happening. And so they basically throw their hands up and go, I don't believe you. You see, this started, I really think, in earnest during the Bush years, during the W years, where that's when the whole opposite world thing came into play. You know, I've talked about opposite world for years. Where's, oh, I see. This is not unique to the 21st century. This has been going on for a long time. It's just gotten more severe, perhaps, is the correct word for it.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
You know, I try to explain to people where I'm coming from when I say, I would love to have a good, honest debate with a Republican, except they won't abide by the beginning ground rules, the ground rules that you agree. You, what's the word? You agree that something is as you know, you, damn it, I'm drawing a mental blank. But basically you agree, sky is blue, grass is green, right? Basic ground rules that a starting point from which to have a debate. They won't even do that. And I'm sorry, you cannot have an honest discussion with someone who will not agree to the most basic facts. So, so that doesn't happen. And then, you know, everything they say is projection. I need to read you this tweet that I just thought summed it up. You know, I've been wanting to write a missive on this whole opposite world mentality and explain how, you know, explain my what I mean when I talk about opposite world is a generalization. So Joe tweeted out, Trump didn't win the election. Dr. Fauci didn't create COVID. Doors are not to blame for school shootings. Neither is pot or porn. There's no caravan coming for your wives. No one is teaching your kids CRT or grooming them to be gay or transgender. These are Republican lies. The end. Except it's not the end. I'm going to take that list and build on it. If you have things you want to add to that list, send them to me. You can tweet at me. I'm at Nicole Sandler. I'm on Facebook, The Nicole Sandler Show. I'm on Twitter. I said at Nicole Sandler. I'm on, email me, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com. Go into the chat room on YouTube or at the Listen Live page at NicoleSandler.com and put them there. Build on this list, because all the projection, all of this opposite world insanity, I want to document it and I want to put it in one place. So that's going to be an ongoing project. Okay. But let me tell you a few things going on right now. Things that are happening that you need to be aware of. First of all, the idiot governor in this state. I'm telling you, the rest of the country, I'm telling you right now, Ron DeSantis is dangerous. He's dangerous. He's not smarter than Trump, but he's better educated. And he understands how government works, and he better understands how to manipulate it. And that's what he's doing. He is manipulating everything. This man is evil. So, you know, his latest outrage, the outrages from this man are too numerous. It would just be the DeSatan hour every day if all I did was tell you about the crap he's pulling. But here's an example. Actually, this story broke Friday. The Special Olympics are happening in Orlando, but they almost didn't because of Ron DeSantis. This is, you know, COVID is serious. Now, a lot of kids or people who participate in the Special Olympics have underlying comorbidities. They have conditions. They have issues that make them more susceptible to disease. Now, it also could make them, to where they would react, have an adverse reaction to a vaccine, perhaps. But you also, a lot of these people, you don't want them getting COVID because the possibilities are just too horrible to think about, right? So, let me just read the headline. The Special Olympics reversed its COVID-19 vaccine mandate for upcoming competitions in Orlando after Florida threatened event organizers with a $27.5 million fine over the requirement. The Special Olympics issued a statement on Friday saying it will lift its mandate as directed by state officials on May 27th, quote, based upon the Florida Department of Health's interpretation of Florida law. The idiot Surgeon General, who death sentence plucked from obscurity, even the people at UCLA, where he allegedly, according to his resume, worked during the beginning of the COVID outbreak, who say they have no idea who he is, certainly didn't work with them at UCLA. That guy, the guy who stood behind the witch doctor woman who said that, I don't know, demons were, I don't even know what she said. She was a fucking moron who should not have an MD next to her name. This guy stood behind her, Latipo, or Lapdog, as we like to call him. So the Special Olympics, in order to not be fined $27.5 million by the state of Florida for trying to protect the athletes participating in the Special Olympics, now will not protect the athletes. So anyone unvaccinated, come on, cavort with these athletes who may have underlying health conditions that make it so they really shouldn't be around unvaccinated people. That's the kind of shit that happens here in Florida every day. But it's not only that. Oh, and by the way, these policies just make things worse here. So, you know, as this weekend, we saw an inordinate number of mass shootings. Yes, the country's still reeling from 10 people murdered in a Buffalo grocery store because they happened to be black and there was some white supremacist asshole who went there specifically to murder black people, or 19 children in fourth grade classrooms and two teachers who were murdered by an 18-year-old who never should have been allowed anywhere near an assault rifle, were gunned down. Here in Florida, we're still dealing with the murderer who killed 17 people at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School right down the street. Now, this killer pled guilty, so he wouldn't have to go through a trial, except the death penalty phase. The death penalty phase is happening now, 2.5 years later. 3 years later, 4 years later, the days all go by. So, but what's happening is they're having trouble with the jury selection process. You know why? Well, first of all, it's been a few years. Everybody down here knows what happened. And the jury pool's been somewhat tainted. But they're trying to pick a jury pool for a trial that will last a minimum, I want to say they said like 6 months. 6 month trial. And all it is the penalty phase. They have to decide whether or not this murderer gets the death penalty or spends the rest of his life behind bars. And for that, this jury selection has been going on seemingly forever, but it's been weeks, probably about a month already. And now, today, the defense lawyers, well, first, yes, the defense lawyers for the shooter asked the judge, Broward Judge Elizabeth Shearer, to step down from the case. First, I think they asked if they could be removed because they're still going through jury selection, voir dire. And one of the key members of the defense team is home battling, say it with me, COVID, because it's Florida. And you're not allowed, not only do they not require a mask, they're not allowed to require you to wear a mask. In case you were wondering, anytime I leave my house, I still wear my stupid mask. And I call it a stupid mask because it's a pain in the ass, but I wear it because I don't want COVID. But most other people in Florida are not wearing them because it's Florida. So when the judge wouldn't let the defense attorneys out of representing the killer. So now they're asking the judge to step down. The defense team earlier threatened to withdraw as counsel rather than follow an order to continue picking jurors while a key member of the defense team is home fighting COVID. So that's dysfunctional, right? It just keeps going that way. Oh, but it gets better. The people in Florida, I've often said, it's not the heat, it's the humidity that turns the brain to mush. So I don't know. I could keep going. It goes from the weird to the insane. Well, like this. First of all, there was some conservative get together this weekend. And I keep telling you that DeSantis is dangerous and you don't believe me. DeSantis beat Trump in this, straw poll at some conservative thing. But not only that, Dump Jr. ran circles around Voldemort Scott, Rick Scott, who is the junior senator from Florida. This is the guy who served two terms as governor. People of Florida elected this man. He was so horrible on the campaign trail that he would just not show up to one debate. He just didn't show up. He sent his mother instead. But here in Florida, I guess they reward you with being an asshole. They reward you for being a jerk. And now, Rick Scott, who is worth upwards of $200 million or more, this is the guy who was a health, I'm doing air quotes because when I say healthcare, Rick Scott's HCA did not provide healthcare. They ran hospitals. In fact, HCA stood for Hospital Corporation of America, don't you know? And Rick Scott's HCA, while he was CEO, was guilty of running the biggest Medicare fraud on the American public in history. When he went on the stand, when he was put on the stand to testify, Governor Scott, I don't think he was governor at the time yet. The man who would become governor, voted in by the people of Florida, took the fifth, I think it was 75 times. He wouldn't answer a freaking question. But this guy self-funded his, at least his first campaign. He has the personality of a dung beetle. Just use your imagination. I have no idea what a dung beetle acts like, but I'm guessing it's Rick Scott. That's who he is. He looks like Voldemort. He sounds like Voldemort. This is the guy who put it. He's the head of the Republican Governors Association now. And he put out a plan for move. You know, the Republican Party doesn't have any plan. So he did it. He put out a plan. And basically his plan was to make Medicare and Social Security both sunset every 10 years and have to be reauthorized by Congress in order to keep them going. Oh, yes. And to make people like you and me, I'm guessing you're in my same financial boat, to make us pay more because God knows those not rich people don't pull their share. Oh, my God. Well, Rick Scott went on one of the TV shows yesterday, and I guess it was his turn to do the Biden bashing. And so where does he go with this? This is what he says.
About this, Biden's a rich kid. Well, what, that is basically entire life.
Biden's a rich kid? Rick Scott said Biden's a rich kid? What? What?
About this, Biden's a rich kid.
No, he wasn't.
Basically, his entire life has been paid for by with your tax dollars.
No, it hasn't.
Has no idea how to deal with inflation. Has no.
Oh my God. Okay, I don't even have to play anything more than that. Joe Biden is the opposite of a rich kid. Rick Scott was the rich kid. But this is what they do. It's projection. So, along those lines, I just got to play this. I'm not going to play the video because you don't need to see their faces. Because, you know, unless you're trying to lose weight, then I guess I can put them up on the screen. But anyway, Louis Gohmert, whose name is the definition of doofus. Gohmert? Louis Gohmert. Actually, you know, I shouldn't be surprised. He did say the quiet part out loud the other day. Did you hear this? He was complaining. Now, just let me just state some fact before I play this clip. It is illegal to lie to Congress. Even if you're not under oath, it's illegal to lie to Congress. It's also illegal to lie to the FBI. Illegal. You can't do that. It's against the law. Even if you didn't swear an oath, it's still illegal. So what did Louis Gohmert have a problem with?
We have a two-tiered justice system.
Two-tiered.
If you're a Republican, you can't even lie to Congress.
If you're a Republican,
lie to an FBI agent.
Wait a minute. If you're a Republican, you can't lie to Congress or to an FBI agent? Hey, Louis. Little secret for you. You can't if you're a Democrat either. But he didn't get that memo. Right?
They're coming after you. They're going to bury you.
Yeah.
They're going to put you in the D.C. jail.
Good.
And terrorize and torture you.
Well,
and
I don't
not
know about
live
that.
Up to the Constitution there. However, this comes on the heels of Sussman being acquitted because the jury that had a bunch of Hillary Clinton lovers in it, donors even.
What?
They said,
Look. The jury had a bunch of Hillary Clinton lovers and donors on it. Well, that's news. You know, I did do an hour with Marcy Wheeler the last week. We didn't have it on this show because we were busy, but I'm going to play it back for you tomorrow so you could get Marcy's latest on all of this stuff before we head into the hearings on Thursday. So tomorrow, Marcy Wheeler for the hour. But do keep going, Louis, because this is just so entertaining.
He said, look, you know, he's a Democrat, and of course they're going to lie. Everybody lies.
Well, no, you lie.
You're a Republican person. No big deal to lie to the FBI, huh?
Exactly.
What?
Yeah, but so this puts an exclamation point. Democrats can lie. They can fail to show up for Congress.
No.
They can lie to Congress.
Bullshit, they
like
do not.
Brendan Clapper did.
What?
And,
Clapper
no
was not a Democrat.
We had referrals. Devin Nunes had referrals.
Okay. When you invoke Devin Nunes is when I have to say, that's enough of Louis Gohmert. Now you know what? Gohmert. I know it was Gomer, like Gomer Pyle, but now it's Gomer, Louis Gohmert. Yeah, that's all you need to know. That's Louis Gohmert. And then there's Peter Navarro. Oh, my God. Now, we knew he was a nut job before he was ever given a job in the White House. In fact, if you're like me, you went, how much lower can this man go, when the former guy tapped him to be a trade advisor? Have you ever heard this guy? Well, it doesn't matter if you didn't hear him before. So here's what happens. Peter Navarro, former trade advisor to the former guy, is subpoenaed by the January 6th Commission. He's subpoenaed to show up in person at a certain date and time. He didn't. And he's subpoenaed to turn over documents, information that the committee needed by a certain date and time. He didn't. So he went to get on a plane to leave town the other day. And as he was trying to get on that plane, he was arrested. Go figure. Hey, Peter, that's what happens when you don't comply with a subpoena. You're subject to arrest. Oh, Peter Navarro didn't like that.
We have a two-tier justice system.
Oh, wrong one. Wait, what? Shit, that says Peter Navarro.
System.
Uh-oh, that says Peter Navarro, but that was Louis Gohmert. Wait, do I have him on this recording? Let's see. Peter Navarro, is this you? Let's see if this is him. Hold on. You never know.
Instead of coming to my door,
yeah,
where I live, which, by the way, is right next to the FBI.
Okay.
You'll
live right
next door to the
FBI.
And say, hey, we need you down at court. We've got a warrant for you.
But why should they? You had two deadlines. You had a deadline to show up in court, and you had a deadline to turn over, produce the documents. You did neither. So now they need to provide you with an invitation to come and comply. You had the invitation. You decided not to comply. Therefore, you were arrested.
Would have gladly come. What did they do? They intercepted me getting on the plane.
Yeah.
And then they put me in
handcuffs.
That's
how it works.
They bring me here.
Yeah.
They put me in leg irons. They stick me in a cell. By the way, just historical note, I was in John Hinckley's cell. They seem to think that
that was
an important historical note. Okay. That's
so
punitive.
What
they did to me today violated the Constitution.
No. Actually, Mr. Navarro, what they did to you today was exactly what they were supposed to do. What you did was violated the law. You violated the law. That's what happened. These people think that the laws don't apply to them. It's the old, what Rachel Maddow used to say, it's okay if you're a Republican, because they think they can get away with anything. It's like Gohmert saying, the Republicans, we can't even lie to the Congress. We can't lie to the FBI. No, you can't. So, you know, hey, so they put you in John Hinckley's cell? Well, guess what? He was released. John Hinckley, the man who tried to assassinate the president. I know it was Reagan, but still, he was a president. The man shot. It didn't kill Reagan. Crippled James Brady and killed him years later. When James Brady died, they said it was a homicide. And they blamed John Hinckley's bullet. But John Hinckley today, unconditionally freed. I know there are some people who think that that's right. I'm sorry. You try to assassinate the president, you spend the rest of your life in jail. That's just, you know, that's the way I tend to think about things. But, you know, hey, that's me. Go figure. Why would I think that someone who tries to assassinate the president would spend the rest of his life in jail? And then Peter Navarro, he's all excited because he's in John Hinckley's cell. He should stay there for as long as John Hinckley should. All right. That's that. All right. I told you we've got a special guest coming up today, and I'm very excited because I used to see her on television all the time. And then this week I read a really great article that I told you about, or last week actually, at Politico of all places. And it was about, again, the lengths to which Republicans are going, that they went back in 2020 to try to steal the election, and now they're building on it, and they're making plans, and they're training people, and they've got all kinds of stuff going on, and yet we seem to just be going along business as usual. Well, thank goodness there are some good journalists out there. So I'm thrilled to welcome to the program Heidi Prisbella. We got to know her on NBC and MSNBC, but she's been a journalist for a long time, working at USA Today and other outlets before that. Hey, Heidi, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it, and I'm so happy to see you here. And congratulations on that piece for Politico, because it was necessary and really good.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It was a long time in the works. It was a lot of work to review all of those tapes, as you can imagine, and to vet everything. And I don't know if you know this, that's my home state as well, Michigan. So I had put in a lot of work there on the ground around the election outside of the TCF Center in 2020, and just felt like it's something I should continue to monitor, that it wasn't a story that I should walk away from.
Right. And I'm glad you didn't. And obviously you've got some sources there in Michigan, because this whole story, I think it's just a microcosm of the larger effort that the Republicans, or the Trumplicans, are making to try to take control of our electoral process. But you've really uncovered a lot of the nuts and bolts of what they're doing. And you've uncovered a massive organization with a lot of planning. You know, I've been involved in progressive politics from a talk show host vantage point for many years. And I remember back in like 2004, the Democrats were very concerned, of course, coming out of the 2000 elections, where the election was decided by the Supreme Court, that we needed to really keep a good watch on the poll. So in 2004, I signed up to be a poll watcher here where I'm at in Broward County, Florida, which was the site of the craziness. Here we are. We tried to play by the rules. I was a poll watcher. I went. I stood back, I followed the rules, I did what we were supposed to do, and there was no trouble. But now what they're talking about, what they want their so-called poll watchers to have access to be able to do at a polling place, is more than what I learned in that training almost 20 years ago, what you're supposed to do in that situation.
So, and that's the interesting thing about this strategy, Nicole, is that it's really not poll watchers anymore. That's what they did in 2020, was they had a lot of volunteer poll watchers who came, and actually there were so many that they had violated COVID rules and they were shut out of the center and they were claiming to see fraud. I was standing there watching camera equipment go by, and a number of them claimed that the camera equipment were clandestine ballots being smuggled in. It was just, you know, a lot of that happening by untrained poll watchers. But the big distinction with 2020 and 2022, 2024, and the strategy is that while those folks were on the outside of the TCF Center and they were kicked out by law enforcement for violating COVID rules, the plan now is to have actual poll workers, right? People who are the official nonpartisan officials, usually traditionally in our recent modern history in this country, right? Who just administer elections to recruit instead election deniers to fill those roles and to train them up on how to contest votes, right? And that was a big part of this, was that they were giving them the training, and as well as new tools like this hotline that would connect them with roving party attorneys. And then, of course, since you can't use a cell phone in a lot of these election centers, there would also be a website with a live chat developed by an online retail company that, you know, works usually for retailers, I should say,
right,
to allow them to live chat with attorneys. And really the goal there was just to expedite any kind of legal challenge, to get it before a judge as soon as possible. And you know, you just had to look at what was happening in the chat as to what the intent was, because some of the questions, for instance, were, well, how do we stop the count if a person of authority isn't listening to us? There was a lot on what would be the specific criteria of how they could challenge a voter. And, you know, to a person, a lot of the nonpartisan election officials like Chris Thomas, who had was actually worked for Republican secretaries of state in the state, said, you know, they can't come in here and cause chaos or they'll get kicked out by the clerk. But the idea was to give them these official positions. And, you know, there's a couple of ways that you can disenfranchise people, right? You can kick up a lot of legal dust, create a pretext for the state legislature or the state canvassing board to say, you know what, those mismanaged Democratic precincts, we don't know what happened there. We can't call this one. We're going to have to kick it to the state legislature. But the second way that gumming things up at the precinct level could disenfranchise voters is if you can imagine you have a poll worker there who's saying, you know, Janice Winfrey, the Detroit clerk, prove to me that that machine isn't connected to the internet. You know, show me the tabulator information. Show me your poll books. I want to audit your poll books, you know, while people are voting. It was just things that could happen that could effectively create long lines where there's already long lines in a lot of these minority districts, which would disenfranchise voters if you make it so onerous to wait in these long lines.
Right. But it gets even worse. I mean, you've got a section in the piece, poll workers versus poll watchers. And the poll watchers are being trained by the party, in this case, the Republican Party, to get in people's faces, to do what they're not supposed to be doing. Unlike the training that, for instance, I got in 2004 to be a poll watcher, where we knew only two people were allowed in the room where the voting was taking place. One Democrat, one Republican, to observe. The rules that they're telling these so-called poll watchers that they can do is really get in everyone's face and challenge voting, right?
So that was one thing. That was one thing that, you know, they were careful about, because they know that it's illegal for them to interact with voters if they're a worker.
Right.
So just again, distinguishing between a watcher and a worker. If you're a poll worker, they have to go to the precinct captain, right, and to challenge the voter. So they can't technically get in the voter's face, but they can create enough legal uncertainty around the voting process that if there's legal questions about what happened in that center and with the votes, then again, you create the pretext for kicking it to the canvassing board or kicking it to the legislature. And frankly, former President Trump is being pretty open about that being his strategy. You remember, Michigan was the place where he had a meeting with Michigan officials around the election. He was calling canvassing board members, right, to try and get them not to certify. And so there's already a history for this of the strategy being, let's have the legislature step in. And President Trump, a week before my story ran, told the New York Times that, in fact, that's how he was weighing his endorsements of state legislative candidates, is by gauging who would be supportive of having a legislature play a greater role, i.e. stepping over the certification process, potentially.
Right. And so it's been the case where election supervisors, election officials in most counties around the country have traditionally been nonpartisan positions, right? Supervisors of elections, even though they might be of a particular party, they operated in a nonpartisan way to get the votes counted, to get everyone voting. Well, now the priority of the Republicans is to put people on these election boards who are not only partisan, but hyper-partisan. Wayne County, which includes Detroit, Republicans nominated to their board a man who said he would not have certified the 2020 election. That's their criteria now. So it's looking like they're trying to put all the pieces into place to be successful at what they weren't successful in 2 years ago. And what you have in this piece, what you saw are videotapes of some of these meetings where they're laying out this strategy. Yes.
Yeah. Video Zoom tapes as well as audio tapes, because they're having, what they call them, workshops. I mean, they're basically training them. And you can see in the story as well, I had screenshots of how to challenge a voter. So yes. it was pretty obvious what the goal was there. But, you know, the thing that really struck me about all of these tapes and listening to hours and hours of them was how much the individuals who were volunteering, or they would be paid, so you can't call them volunteers, but who were answering the call from the RNC, really believed it. They really believed that fraud was committed, because the RNC directors had to constantly redirect them to focus on volunteering for 2022 and 2024, because they were so upset about 2020. Now, as you and I both know, there was something like 250 audits by precinct leaders and clerks in Michigan.
Yeah.
There was a comprehensive months-long investigation by a Republican-led Senate committee, which found that there was no widespread fraud. And not only that, but the people who said that and furthered that false narrative should be investigated for furthering their own personal political interests. And yet none of that, these individuals live in such a different media ecosystem that they didn't know that. And the RNC officials never, not only didn't correct them, but you can hear one of the clips that I share on the website is from the RNC Michigan state director, who says, and that's why you have to volunteer for 2022 and 2024, is because so that the fraud doesn't happen again, because we all know there was fraud. Well, so that went beyond just ignoring it. That was actually telling them a lie in order to enlist them and get them ginned up and ready to challenge voters in the next elections.
But is there a bit of a wink and a nod in there as well? Here's a line from your piece. You're talking about Jackie Eubanks, a Trump-endorsed state House candidate who warned, quote, kids my age who are communists do and will staff our elections, in urging Republicans to become paid full-time election workers to police absentee ballot signatures, according to a recording of the summit. Speaking separately to Macomb County Republicans, Eubanks also recently said, quote, the election system is rigged, and who best to steal it but our clerks?
Yeah, well, I mean, she's an example of the type of person that they are giving a platform at some of these events, because you have RNC officials and Matthew Seyfried, who is technically going through things that are in the statute and that technically you can do, but that you just don't ever see from an election inspector. And these are, fraud is so, so rare, Nicole. As we know, there was a research paper, actually an analysis of the Heritage Foundation, the Conservative Heritage Foundation, that found that it was you'd be four times more likely to get struck by lightning than to witness such fraud. But nevertheless, of course, there's these provisions in the statute, and that is what they are highlighting to these individuals. So you have the RNC, who's kind of just, you know, yes, it's legal, right? Technically, it's legal, but it's extremely misleading to these individuals who actually believe it. So that is where the recruitment is taking place, is that meetings like this one, where you heard Miss Eubanks speak, and it's a group called Stand Up Michigan, which is a very Make America Great Again heavy group that really supports President Trump. I used as an example in my story that they adapted the YMCA song to MAGA. That's just how enthusiastic supporters they are of President Trump. And they are the ones who are volunteering for these positions.
Wow. You know, you also point out, we're speaking with Heidi Prisbella, who wrote this great piece for Politico. I will link to the piece where I post the interview on my website at NicoleSandler.com with today's date, /6-6-22, that Michigan was almost sort of like ground zero of the election, in that this is where they came closest to actually succeeding with their coup. And that this I didn't understand until I read your piece, that the we're seeing the direct consequences of the Supreme Court gutting the Voting Rights Act, because up until now, they were under a Section 5 directive that they couldn't change anything without getting clearance because of their bad efforts in the past. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but right, they had to get clearance before they could put any of this kind of stuff into effect before the Voting Rights Act was gutted. Now that provision doesn't exist and they can make changes.
That's a good, that is a good observation, Nicole, which I didn't make, you know, make that observation in the story, but you do rightly point that out. But what I did say is that since the 1980s, early 1980s, the RNC has been under a consent decree, which was something that they entered into because they did not want to go to court,
right,
facing charges that they were intimidating people, minorities, going into minority districts and intimidating individuals and including sending armed individuals into minority voting precincts, which is obviously the most extreme form of voter intimidation. So they did not go to court on that. They entered a consent decree, and really since the 1980s have been under that until it was lifted by a judge in 2018. So technically 2020 would have been the first year that the RNC could do any kind of like organized poll election integrity work. And they say in the tapes, you know, we were really sloppy about it. We were really, really not trained well. You know, we got shut out of the TCF Center. When we saw fraud occur, they, again, because many of them alleged to have seen fraud, that they were bullied, that people got in their face and pushed them out. Now, when I was there, I do recall these individuals making a lot of accusations and creating a lot of chaos, and they did get put out for that reason, because they were also storming the center and violating COVID protocols. Mm-hmm. But they again use that as, to your point, Michigan was ground zero.
Right. So now, okay, again, I'll bring up, you're from Michigan. I live in Florida. And we have this madman as governor who thinks he's an emperor or something. And one of the things that he's done out of many is create an election police force, like his own private police force that he thinks he's going to deploy on election day to make sure that the elections are free and fair. Talk about intimidation. And again, Florida, I think, was also hampered under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, where they couldn't just change the rules around elections without first consulting the Justice Department. Now that doesn't exist anymore. And DeSantis is doing all kinds of really sketchy stuff like this. You talked about, you know, armed people at polling places. Well, that's exactly what he says he's going to do.
Well, the nexus of law enforcement getting involved in election administration in various states is actually potentially very concerning, because yeah, you see that in Florida, and that's probably the most extreme example. But in Michigan, that was one of the things I heard in the tapes as well, was that the individuals who were locked out last time said, we don't want that to happen again. So this time we'll preemptively reach out to law enforcement and just let them know this is what we're doing and educate them about voter fraud and what we're doing so that this time that doesn't happen again. And of course, there was a sheriff in Michigan around 2020
who
wanted to seize voting machines.
Right.
He deemed himself constitutional sheriff, Darleaf, I believe was his name. And so that's another thing to watch, is the extent to which actual members of law enforcement, he had attended a Trump rally, that was the an event at the Capitol that was around protests of masks. But in any event, that is something to watch in Florida and Michigan and many other states, is now this concern about, is law enforcement going to be compromised in any way by being given disinformation about the prevalence of voter fraud.
Wow. It is stunning. And it must be stressed yet again. As you said, there were something like 250 court cases brought. And what? I don't think any of them found an abundance of voter fraud. In fact,
no,
down here,
most of them were thrown out.
Right.
Yeah.
And down there were a few people, mostly from the villages near Ocala here in Florida, that were found that did commit voter fraud. There were Republicans who tried to vote twice for Trump.
Yeah, that's right. I think those were the only instances.
Yes.
Were a couple of instances. At least the majority were individuals who tried to vote twice for Trump. But again, now it's like a problem was created as well where it didn't exist before, because that analysis of that was done at the Heritage Foundation's voter fraud database had again found that it was so rare. And now you have individual, we're actually finding, you know, the occasional incidents of it. Whereas before it was just hard to find anything that wasn't just a mistake.
Right. And instead we're seeing lots of mistakes, a lot of people being purged from voter rolls who shouldn't be. And the ones who have tried to vote twice turn out to be, you know, Trumpers. Meanwhile, you know, there's a woman in Texas who thought she had been convicted, but she was freed, that she was allowed to vote, and then was told that she wasn't allowed to vote. And she's gone to jail for 5 years. There's a lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense like that.
You know, I didn't have a chance to get into this in the story, but I mean, one thing to watch for would be what Chris Thomas, he was the former elections director, told me happened in the 80s, which was or in the 70s and 80s before they were under the consent decree, is what is called caging. Because I said, how would they know even how to challenge a voter when they come in just by looking at them? How would you know to challenge that person that they aren't of age or they aren't a legal resident or whatever the criteria is there? And they said that that previously there was I forgot what I was saying, Nicole.
About challenging the voter. How did they know when to challenge a voter?
Yeah. Oh, God, it was good, too. It went right out of my head.
I hate when that happens. It happens all the time. Yeah. It'll come back when you're not thinking about it. So, in fact, there is a piece in your piece, a graphic, how to challenge a voter. But that's for today in Michigan. Telling these poll watchers who are not supposed to be challenging anything, as far as I remember from my training, how to challenge a voter.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the slides. There's the hotline, which also I'm sure didn't exist, and the website. So basically equipping them with the tools to go ahead and try and challenge votes. But now that this has been exposed, I'll be curious to see what the clerks are going to do about it, what potentially the Secretary of State is going to do about it, and what the other states are going to do about it, because this is a program, having an election integrity director is something that exists in 16 different states. Now, I can't speak for what is happening in their trainings or in their sessions, this is what's happening in Michigan. So draw whatever inference you want about what might potentially be happening in those other battleground states.
Absolutely. Hey, Heidi Prisbola, I'm going to switch gears for a moment. I urge everyone to read this Politico story because it is eye-opening and there's a lot of great information there, and it'll be linked on my blog. The big January 6th hearings begin this Thursday night. I have a few concerns. One is I don't trust Donald Trump and his minions to just sit back and let this happen. I'm wondering what kind of distraction is going to pop up between now and Thursday night. Is that the cynic in me? Or do you think that I'm like, I have a right to be concerned?
Well, I don't know that they would come and leak that to me, Nicole, but I think it's safe to say there's going to be counter programming. You know, I feel a little deja vu having covered impeachment, and there have been all of this expectation and buildup that, wow, once they bring the receipts, you know, the American people are really going to see this and they're really going to understand what happened here. And I think they're going at this a little bit different in that they've hired an actual producer to try and put together the most salient pieces of the video testimony that they've gotten. And this Meadows aide, for instance, who apparently is going to be potentially their star witness.
A name that we hadn't heard before, Courtney something?
I think it's Cassidy. Cassidy.
That's name? It. Yeah. Cassidy Hutchinson, yeah.
But here's the thing, and you're right to be a cynic, because is Newsmax going to be covering that?
Nope.
Is Fox News even going to be covering that?
Nope.
So in a way, you will be further educating a lot of individuals who are already pretty well versed in the revelations that have come along on this. But at the end of the day, it's going to be up to the Justice Department to act. And I don't know that it's going to move public opinion dramatically, but you know what? I could be wrong.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. None of us know. The question is, though, the difference between now and Watergate, and I was around, I was young, but I was around, there wasn't this distrust of the news media, certainly not to the extent that we have it now. And everybody watched the Watergate hearings. I mean, I was 12, but everybody watched the Watergate hearings. And now, as you just mentioned, Fox won't carry it. They'll probably put on, as I said earlier, reruns of the Benghazi hearings, because that seems to be where they're still focused. They're already talking about resurrecting. It doesn't have to be Benghazi. It's just their whatever they come up with, should they take control of Congress come, you know, next term. I went off earlier in the program, and you can't have a decent debate or even interview one of these people because they won't submit to the basic facts. Sky is blue, grass is green. So as a journalist, how do you approach someone who you know is going to lie to you from the get-go? You're not going to get an honest answer from them. How do you ask them a question?
Well, it depends if they'll give you the interview, but I've spent a lot of times in the halls of Congress, and honestly, a lot of the tactics have had to be adjusted, in my opinion, and I can only speak for what I do. But I have confronted people when they're not telling the truth. And it's gotten on camera. But you can't do it all the time. You have to really pick and choose, because then they won't talk to you.
Right. You know, and that seems to be the problem, is people, reporters, journalists who know better have to play along if they want to continued access. It's like everything has changed in the last, I'd say, 20 years. It's got to be frustrating. Now, we're getting close to the end of the hour, Heidi. I'm so glad you joined us today. Like I said, I've been seeing you on TV for a few years now, and I'm bummed to learn you've left NBC, but hopefully on to better, bigger, better, greener pastures.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's going to kill me for the rest of today what the thought was that went out of my head.
It happens. Just tweet at me and I'll fill everyone in. It happens to me. It's brain fart. It happens. I'm older than you. It happens to me more often.
Well, thanks for having me.
It was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much. Keep up the great work. Any leads on anything else coming up soon? Anything you can talk about?
Watching this space. Yeah.
Okay. We'll watch this space. Heidi Prisbola. People can follow you on Twitter at Heidi Reports. And you do have a website, HeidiPrisbola.com. I won't spell it, but I'll post a link to it on the blog where I post today's show as well. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. It was great to meet you.
You too.
All right.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. There you go, Heidi Prisbola. She does good work. You know, I'm kind of critical of MSNBC these days. I always appreciated her work. This first time I met her, she seems like a nice enough person. And she, you know, again, I appreciate someone who does the work and comes with the knowledge, and she does. There were a few other things I was going to tell you about today. Oh, I have an update from Tanya. who is back in Ukraine. She's back in Kyiv. And I reached out to her today because I heard that they dropped some bombs on Kyiv again. And I asked her if she's okay. And she wrote back, "Hi, my darling. Yesterday morning, we wake up very early and could not sleep. And an hour later, we heard an explosion. They blew up a factory where train cars are being repaired. We are well. I really want this to end. I want a peaceful city, a peaceful country, but I'm at home and I'm happy. How are you? How is your life?" she asked. So that's the latest from Tanya. She's back in Kyiv. She's happy. She's with her husband. But Putin's bombing there again, so nobody's safe. Ugh. All right. Tomorrow, we will rerun the interview that I did the other day with Marcy Wheeler to bring you up to speed on everything, what going on with the 1-6 prosecutions and getting us ready for the hearings to begin Thursday night. Okay? All right. With that, we are done for today. But as usual, there's news. And I didn't even talk about the weekend's shootings. I'll leave that to the official newscaster. Take it away, Nicole.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, maybe we just need to change the name. Instead of the United States of America, perhaps we should change it to the Gun-Toting States of America. Following 2 weeks of horrific carnage from mass shootings around the country, 6 or was it 7 more mass shootings took place across the nation this past weekend, leaving at least 12 or maybe 15 people dead and anywhere from 38 to 60 people injured. Hard to keep track when there are that many shootings happening in a matter of hours. On Saturday night, multiple shooters opened fire on a busy street in Philadelphia, killing 3 and injuring 12. 2 people died and 12 were injured by gunfire in Chattanooga, Tennessee, while a third person died after being struck by a car. In South Carolina's Clarendon County, a drive-by shooting at a graduation party, which authorities say may have been gang-related, killed 1 person, injured 7 more. Other shootings took place in Saginaw, Michigan, Mesa, Arizona, and probably not too far from where you are right now. So what's being done about it? Well, some senators are talking in a bipartisan group, allegedly working on a bill that could expand background checks and encourage states to adopt red flag laws. But there's no indication that President Biden's demand for a new assault weapons ban is even on the table. And any bill that goes before the Senate will require 60 votes to pass because, well, filibuster. The House Judiciary Committee last week passed the Protecting Our Kids Act, which was a package of 8 bills that would raise the legal age to buy some semi-automatic rifles to 21, address gun trafficking, institute gun storage requirements, as well as high-capacity magazine bans, ghost guns, and bump stocks. Each of these measures will be voted on individually, as House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer wrote in a letter to his colleagues, to place Republicans on record. Okay, so is there no goal in getting them passed? Chances are these 8 bills won't even be introduced in the Senate, but they'll get them on the record, all right? On Wednesday, the House Oversight and Reform Committee will hold a hearing on what happened in Uvalde, Texas. Families and victims will testify, including that 10-year-old girl who covered herself with her friend's blood and played dead. Well, after a break in the voting action last week, Americans returned to the polls for a big primary day with 7 states voting Tuesday: California, Iowa, Mississippi, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, South Dakota, and then on Saturday, the special primary election to fill the remainder of Don Young's term in Congress. This is not the primary for the midterm elections. This is a special election just to fill out the remainder of Don Young's term, which would run from now through the beginning of January. And on the ballot for next Saturday, 40-some-odd candidates, including Sarah Palin and Santa Claus. Of course, there's a lot to watch tomorrow in California, including the L.A. mayoral race and quite a few battleground congressional primaries. But it's worth noting that we've now unofficially entered the summer in an election year. And that means that the number of legislative days between now and Election Day, November 8th, are rapidly disappearing. Take a guess. Well, if you said there are 57 days that the Senate is scheduled to be in Washington, you'd be close. You see, that includes Fridays, and the Senate rarely meets on Fridays. So if you take out Fridays, it's 44 days. 44 legislative days between now and Election Day. And what's that you say? Joe Manchin is talking about coming to the table again? Oh, please. Well, the attacks continue in Ukraine as Russia appears to be stepping up its offensive, launching airstrikes on the capital city of Kyiv for the first time in more than a month. Putin apparently reacting to reports that the West would send longer-range rocket systems to Ukraine to help defend themselves against Russia. President Biden reportedly plans to invoke the Defense Production Act to support the domestic solar panel industry. He also plans to announce a two-year halt on tariffs for solar equipment, which would allow companies working on solar projects in the U.S. to keep using foreign-made equipment while U.S. manufacturing catches up. These decisions come after several exporters have reduced or stopped sales of solar equipment in the U.S. in response to an investigation by the Department of Commerce that could lead to the imposition of retroactive tariffs. And finally, eyes go from watching the royal family to watching Parliament today as Prime Minister Boris Johnson of the U.K. faces a no-confidence vote from his own party, the Conservative Party, this evening. The vote was triggered when 15% of Conservative lawmakers submitted letters of no confidence to the 1922 committee that comprises all Conservative members of Parliament who do not hold government jobs. Johnson has faced criticism over the Partygate scandal, in which he flouted his own government's COVID-19 restrictions with a series of alcohol-fueled parties and other gatherings. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.